You sort of set the tone for your whole book is that black feminists have grounded their experience in women working outside the academy, right. outside academia, particularly right. poor and working class. How does right. that, how does that change how feminism, or maybe specifically black feminism, is viewed?
You know, black feminism is very much, it's like, it's as you say, it's totally grounded in coming from the experiences of black women in the academy who have very often been sort of in the history of sort of thinking about black feminism in the academy, very often we are from these very sorts of places that we're talking about. So we're very, so like myself, we're often from working class black communities or from poor communities. And what that does is that is established black feminism as something that is fundamentally concerned with thinking about the lives of, well, let me say it this way, it, fundamentally interested in thinking about feminism from the perspective of those who are not necessarily within the academy. And that totally shapes the ways in which we sort of come at the questions we come at. Particularly thinking about sort of the early stages, what gets talked about is like second wave feminism in the 70s and 80s, but even sort of in the more contemporary moment, which is thought of as third wave or even fourth wave feminism. As more and more folks enter the academy and as more and more folks are not necessarily first generation, sometimes the conversation shift a little bit. But that feminism, black feminism in particular, has just sort of always been rooted, fundamentally rooted in a particular kind of working class ideology and space. That doesn't mean that everybody who considers himself a black feminist is working class or comes from that space. But that's sort of generally that's where the work has been grounded, and that has shaped the discourse in particular kinds of ways that I think are really important for not only black feminism, but thinking about feminism more broadly.
Well, let me ask you about feminism more broadly. How is what you're just talking about different than feminism more broadly? You know, like on a macro or even how white feminism has been viewed.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of the intervention that, so to talk again about like sort of second wave feminism and thinking about some of the feminists who did so much great work and important and foundational for work for us in the 70s and 80s. So I'm thinking about people like Audre Lorde. I'm thinking about the Combahee River Collective, Barbara Smith, like a whole host of other folk, that the intervention was about sort of the ways in which feminism was often sort of thought of as in terms of like white women, white middle class women, that it emerges out of a place in which the concerns that feminism is taking up are those that are related to sort of middle class white women. And it shows up in things as simple as sort of thinking about work, right? That what some early feminists are talking about is wanting to have the ability to work in the same sorts of places, in the same kinds of ways, on par with men. Where for black women, we rarely had the opportunity to not work. That work has been a fundamental part of our existence, even back in slavery when we were forced to work and forced to work in particular kinds of ways. So that what it means for black feminists to take up the question of work or labor looks fundamentally different. And that becomes important because it changes the whole sort of discourse or narrative around what feminism is and then who it is for. And so a term like intersectionality, for instance, emerges out of the work of black feminists. And that's a term that is bandied about now in all sorts of places, but that is fundamentally about thinking about feminist discourse, feminism, and all the sort of ancillary interests or things that were sort of theories, looking at sort of, we can't just sort of take as a given that when we talk about feminism, that it means something in particular, and that we can't take sort of middle-class white women as the norm. We have to think about what feminism means more broadly. And that the experiences of women of color shift various narratives, that the experiences of women, whatever race or ethnicity, based upon class strata, changes the ways in which we think about the discourse, that sexuality and gender, the ways in which people use those terms or destabilize a term like gender or what it means to be a man and a woman, that all of those things are fundamentally important to the ways in which we think about gender, sexuality, and ultimately feminism. And a lot of that work comes out of the work of women of color, in particular Black women, working in the 70s and 80s.
You're listening to Peoria native Terrian Williamson. She's a professor at the University of Minnesota right now, and her latest book is called Scandalize My Name. There's been a lot of criticism of feminism in general for over the decades, but one of the criticisms has been that Black feminists have been excluded from the conversation. Is it getting better? Was the March on Washington a better representation?
Yeah, I think so. I think while we can always point to work still to be done, I think it's definitely getting better. I think that, you know, I'm affiliated with the gender studies program now, and I think that in everything that we do in that program, and in other programs that I've been affiliated with, there's at least sort of some kind of investment in ensuring that when we talk about women, we don't have a certain kind of notion of what that means, that we are contextualizing that in by way of race, gender, sexuality, et cetera. Is there still work to be done in terms of the ways in which issues around Black women get brought up or talked about or theorized? Absolutely. That's part of what I'm trying to get at in my book. But we certainly have made some advances. And I think even you think about the march on the recent march, that it was women of color who were very much at the forefront of that national march, right? They were significant in making it happen. They were significant in the programming. They were significant in bringing people out. And so that has been one of the good things that I've seen that's emerged by way of sort of including women of color and women of color demanding inclusion in the conversations and the theorizations about what feminism is.
In your book, you use media a lot, reality television and music. You've used Karen White's Superwoman as a starting point. You talk about some of these reality TV shows that are aimed especially at Black audiences. Why was it important for you to include that in your argument for the book?
Yeah, it was really important. One, so when I went into grad school in the very early stages, I wanted to write a book all about reality television. And my advisors, part of it was steered me away from that for strategic reasons, but also the work just started going in different directions. But that always, the sort of concern about media representations was always a fundamental importance to me. The reason I was really interested in reality television going into grad school was that immediately before grad school, I was in law school. And I was in law school during a period of time when reality television shows really started to take off, particularly Black reality television. So shows that center and focus upon Black folks, have predominantly Black characters and that sort of are geared towards Black audiences. And I recognized particular tropes that were showing up in reality television over and over again. And that's something that I wanted to deal with. One of the things I talk about in the first chapter of the book, which is called On Anger, is sort of thinking about the ways in which this sort of trope of Black women and anger shows up in reality television. And there's all of this pushback against reality television, and there's all these sort of ongoing conversations about negative imagery and that sort of thing. But part of what I'm trying to do by way of my book is sort of get out of the kind of conundrum that occurs by way of trying to think about tropes and media representations only in terms of good or bad, negative or positive. Because ultimately, I feel like those are unanswerable questions. I can make a case for a particular kind of show being a sort of negative representation of Black women, but there is someone else who might suggest that image is liberatory for some reason. And what often happens in these conversations is that people like me, people who have degrees, people who have been educated in particular kinds of ways, sort of formally educated, are seen as sort of experts, the loudest voices in the room, and it's supposed to be what carries the day. And sort of the whole thing that I'm trying to get at in my work is that theory comes from all sorts of places, including from folk who don't have the sort of privilege of accessing the academy, and that it's important to attend to the various ways that people come at different kinds of media representations. And the site where the sort of thinking about Black women seems to be taken up most sort of in public culture is sites like reality television. There are conversations happening on reality television, whatever one feels about the rightness or wrongness or particular kinds of representations or certain shows. I have found that there are conversations occurring on reality television that are happening few other places. So, for instance, I write in one chapter of my book on Keisha Cole's reality show, and that there are all these conversations that are happening around drug addiction and its effect on Black families. It was folks in my generation who a lot of us had parents or close family members who sort of came up, were being raised by folks who were being hit by the crack epidemic that hit Black communities in the 70s, for instance. And so the places where the kind of generational conversations about what the crack epidemic meant and how it has affected our communities and our families, the place where I saw that showing up in a way that I wasn't seeing it show up in any other place was on this reality television show. Another theme that I see emerging quite a bit and a lot of conversations happening around are like domestic violence and sexual assault. The ways in which Black women are affected by domestic violence and sexual assault are so rarely talked about in public discourse, but are so fundamentally important to be talked about because it affects our lives so deeply. We rarely see that in public culture, and it becomes these reality television shows that become the sites wherein those conversations can be had. And I've had those conversations with folks in the academy, as well as people who I know and love and care about who have never sat in a college classroom.
Okay, all right. This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton, talking with Terrian Williamson, a professor at the University of Minnesota, also the author of the book Scandalize My Name, Black Feminist Practice and the Making of Black Social Life. A couple of the labels you tackled early in the book, the angry Black woman, the strong Black woman. You know, there's some grounding in reality in this, but it's also, as you argue, a very limiting label, and I think you argue mostly untrue. How are those two labels especially unhelpful?
Well, there's been a lot of sort of work in a lot of Black feminist writing that attempts to unpack these tropes or narratives or stereotypes, sort of those words are often used interchangeably. And there's been sort of a lot of conversation about those and the ways in which sort of the notion of the stereotype is that it comes to stand in for all of us, right? That this idea of the Black woman as angry becomes this kind of totalizing concept. It becomes limiting for Black women. It becomes hard for Black women to express themselves in particular kinds of ways because they always feel as if they're going to be taken as, for instance, angry. So even if they have a particular kind of disagreement with something, it becomes difficult to articulate yourselves in a space in which you feel like these sort of foregoing narratives of who you are as a Black woman are always going to be the context in which you are understood, and that it becomes hard to dig out of that.
Can I put words in your mouth and then you react to that?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't be angry because you would be an angry Black woman with all that, you know, all the connotation that
right.
comes out of that, where maybe even a white woman could, or just white people in general can be angry, and they're just angry. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
That's sort of the notion, right? That because we are... because of these sort of stereotypes, right, we are always seen as angry. And so there's a way in which you operate in the world and a way in which you're always trying to combat that notion, all right? You're always trying to police and check yourself in particular kinds of ways so that you will not be taken for a particular kind of stereotype. In the case of something like the strong Black woman, which emerges out of this notion that Black women can take anything, right? And this is something that gets generated in a number of places, including within Black community, right? You're not supposed to fall apart. You're not supposed to cry. You're supposed to be able to take all of the things that get heaped upon you and just go with it without sort of crumbling or falling apart. And so a lot of academics have come at that notion, suggesting that what that then does is Black women don't seek various kinds of resources that they need, including like mental health resources, for instance, or feel like they have to take on all of these things without sort of reaching out to other folks for help. And so that this notion of the strong Black woman, which in some ways is very valorizing and is seen as something that is positive, that there's ways in which it has all these negative connotations for the ways in which Black women go about their lives on a day-to-day basis.
Tarian Williamson, it's fascinating talking to you. Congratulations on a wonderfully written book. It's just a joy to read, and continued good luck with it.
Thank you so much.